How are y'all doing? I see summer has struck. We all enjoying some extra time this summer, hopefully, vacations. All right. If you have your Bibles, we're going to be in Exodus chapter 16. Is this thing working? We hear sound? No? We'll get it. Ted is on it. Don't worry. Okay, so what we're going to do, a couple things here. So I'll give you the wildlife report today. No bears spotted in Maryland Avenue on my morning walk, so just kind of a follow-up from last week. So we were safe, although I will say this. Because of last week, I decided instead of making a right out of my driveway, I made a left out of it this morning. So still on the lookout, but the bear has not been spotted again. And then second thing, so Joe has offered his business, what's it, Westchester Turf and Tennis, I believe. It's over in Hawthorne, and it's an indoor tennis, indoor soccer. We can play some dodgeball. So he has offered his building for us to use one of these afternoons. So we want to take a quick poll. What works best for our schedules, a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday afternoon? To go over there, hang out, grab some food, play some tennis, dodgeball, capture the flag. I know some people were over there a couple of weeks ago and had a blast, and everyone's like, when can we go back again? And so Joe has graciously offered to open the doors for us again. So do we like Saturday or do we like a Sunday afternoon? Okay, we should raise hands, Heather says. So Saturday. Oh, wow, it's unanimous. Oh. Okay, Sunday. Francis, you have to join us. So I guess a Sunday it is. So we'll figure out a date, and we'll put that in the newsletter, and we'll announce that next week. So Sunday after church, we will go and have a blast in air condition. How's the air condition working there? It's good. So, yes. Now, this morning is week two of our summer series, Christmas in July and August, Finding Peace and Joy. So I started this series by saying that what I simply wanted to do throughout the summer months is kind of walk you through where I've been over the past year and some different ways, some different experiences and practices that I've put into place in order to cultivate more peace and joy in my life. So last week, we started by talking about the practice of gratitude. And the practice that I gave you was keeping a gratitude journal. So just any insights, any observations, any thoughts from more intentionally focusing on gratitude this week? Anyone have any thoughts on that one? Anyone find themselves more grateful? Okay. This side's tracking. We'll keep at it. Honestly, keep at it. Some of these practices, they take some time to develop those muscles, so that they become more routine in our lives. So week two, this morning, I want to talk about the practice of rest, or I think I also call it play. So we can call it rest, we can call it play. And in order to start, let's begin by looking at Exodus chapter 16, be in verse 25. And here's where we are in the story. The Israelites have just been rescued from Egypt. They have just been rescued from slavery. And now they find themselves wandering all throughout the desert. They're what you might call nomads. And here's the thing about nomads. You don't have a particular place. You don't have a specific place where you live. You are wandering from one place to the next. You're picking up your tent. You're living here one day, and you're here the next day. So when you're a nomad, you're not carrying a whole bunch of stuff with you. There's no such thing as a U-Haul a couple thousands of years ago. So basically, whatever you could carry, those were all of your possessions. And when it came to food, you would have to gather your food each day. There was no refrigeration. There weren't coolers. There weren't ice packs that you could just pack your food in and take it on the journey with you. You had to go out and gather the food that you would eat on that particular day. So the Israelites, they find themselves wandering in the desert, and every single morning, they would wake up, They'd open up their tent door. They'd go out. They'd greet the morning like you all do. And then they would find on the floor their breakfast, on the floor of the desert, this substance called manna, which in Hebrew means, what is it? And you have to put that emphasis on the what. What is it? And that's really what manna means, because the first time they saw it, they're like, what is this stuff? Is it edible? Can we eat it? But sure enough, they could. And what they were to do is every single morning, they went out and they gathered manna, enough for them to survive for the day, enough to sustain them until later on in the evening. And then there was a whole other thing with quail, but that came a little bit later in the day. Now, every single day, you would go out and gather just for that day. Because if you got a little bit greedy, or if you thought you were extra hungry, but you realized that you really weren't as hungry as you thought, and you left a little by your bedside for a midnight snack or to grab some in the morning when you woke up, you would find upon rising that the manna, the what is it, would be filled with maggots. And no one wants to eat what is it with maggots. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Not such a good thing. Now, the only exception was the day before the Sabbath. And on the day before the Sabbath, you were allowed to gather enough manna for 2 days. And miraculously, the manna survived overnight. It made it until the next day, because on the Sabbath, the Israelites were not to do any work. They were to rest. They were not to do anything, not even gather the, what is it, from the desert floor. But apparently, some of the Israelites didn't quite get the message. And so let's pick up the story here. Verse 25, eat it today, Moses said, because today is a Sabbath to the Lord, and you will not find any of the manna on the ground today. 6 days you're to gather it, but on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there will not be any. Nevertheless, I love it, nevertheless, there's always a but. Some of the people went out on the seventh day to gather it, but they found none. Some of you are like these people on the seventh day where you're told something and yet still you're going out looking for it. There's always a few of those in the room. But they found none. Then the Lord said to Moses, how long will you refuse to keep my commands and my instructions? Bear in mind that the Lord has given you the Sabbath. That is why on the sixth day, he gives you bread for 2 days. Everyone is to stay where they are on the seventh day. No one is to go out. And so the people rested on the seventh day. Two things to look at here. First, this question, how long will you refuse? Oftentimes, when we read a statement like this, we assume that God is angry and that God's about to lay the smackdown on the people. But I think that this is a little less angry and a little more sadness, longing on God's part. How long will they keep going without resting? How long will they continue to think that life is all about going and going? How long will they continue living this way? How long until they start to trust that for a day they can simply rest and enjoy? And then the second thing we come to, bear in mind, the Lord has given you the Sabbath. In other words, the Sabbath is not a chore. It's not an obligation. The Sabbath is a gift. It's a gift that's been given to the Israelites, and I would argue to us as well. It's a gift that for 6 days you pour yourself out. For 6 days you give your energies to the world, to what you have to do. But then on the seventh, you refill. On the seventh, you take time to pour back into your soul all that has been let out for those 6 days. The Sabbath was a gift because it told the Israelites that what they had seen and what they had experienced in Egypt wasn't the way to fully live, but there was a different way. There was a way of living that produces more peace, more joy, more satisfaction, more fulfillment than that way of constantly going and working that they had experienced in Egypt. Because if we rewind in the story a couple of chapters to Exodus chapter 5, we come upon a part in the narrative where Moses has just approached the Pharaoh, who is the leader of the Egyptian world. And the Pharaoh is the one who has enslaved the Israelites. And so Moses approaches the leader, the Pharaoh, the slave master. And he says, we've been working really hard, the Israelites, me and my people, my group. Will you please let us go to the wilderness for 3 days so that we can offer sacrifices to our God? In other words, so we can have a party. Because that's what these festivals were all about. They were about partying. We often think, offer sacrifices, all pious, like walking in straight line. No, no, no. This was like an off. There was a DJ there. I mean, this party was off the hook. And so Moses is like, can we please have 3 days to party and offer sacrifices to God, to give thanks to God for our lives? And so here is how Pharaoh responds. But the king of Egypt said, Moses and Aaron, why are you taking the people away from their labor? Get back to your work. Anyone have a boss like this? Get back to your work. Then Pharaoh said, look, the people of the land are now numerous, and you're stopping them from working. That same day, Pharaoh gave this order to the slave drivers and overseers in charge of the people. You are no longer to supply the people with straw for making bricks. Let them go and gather their own straw, but require them to make the same number of bricks as before. Don't reduce the quota. They are lazy. That is why they are crying out, let us go and sacrifice to our God. So make the work harder for the people so they keep working and pay no attention to lies. Yeah, this way of living that God has been inviting the Israelites into is completely different than the way of living that they experienced in Egypt, where it was all about work harder, produce more, keep going, never rest. Don't stop working, because if you stop working, well, then you are going to be considered lazy. You're going to be considered of little value to our society. Now, let's ask the question. In the modern world in which we live, which way of living is encouraged? This way of resting or this way of going and going and never ceasing? Which way of living does our world encourage today? There are some things that don't change. This is true for us in our society, but this was obviously true also thousands of years earlier, where value is measured by how much you produce, how quickly you can produce it. See, the Israelites, when they were told, you can rest, you can take a break, you can cease, you can take a day to refill your soul, to play, to enjoy life in the company of others, they thought, I don't know if I can do this. They had a hard time trusting that this was true. And I would argue that we today in our world have a hard time trusting and believing that we can actually rest and take time to refill our souls. What is it about ourselves that we have such a hard time resting and being still? So a while back when I was going through this period of burnout and just completely void of peace and joy, I was talking to a few people about my situation, about what was going on and how I was feeling, and I was given an assignment. Now, the assignment was that for an entire week, every single morning, I would wake up, do what I had to do in the morning, get Reese up, breakfast, whatever I had to get done, and then for the rest of that morning, I was to ask myself the question, what would most fill my soul right now? And then I was to go and do it. So no email, no phone calls, no meetings, nothing until after lunch. The morning was simply for me to say, what will most fill my soul? And then to go and engage in those practices. And I was to carry a notebook around with me as well, so that if something came up, like, oh, I need to do this, or oh, I need to call that person, I would just write it down in my notebook, and then I would deal with it a little bit later. So this week was glorious. I went for a long bike ride, took some yoga, just sat along the river, watched the water, read a ton, which is always, for me, the thing to do, and absolutely just, I felt more full as the week progressed. And towards the end of the week, I was like, man, this is amazing. Then I was supposed to report back to this person and let him know what I had seen, what I experienced, what were some of my insights, what had I learned from this week of practicing rest. So I sat at my computer, and I just started writing, typing. Okay, here's what I learned. And I must have sat there for at least an hour, no joke, because one thing came, and then something else came, and then something else, and I was just furiously typing on the keyboard. And it was more and more like all these different connections and observations that I made simply from taking time to rest and slow down and to fill my soul. So what I want to do this morning is I want to give you one of those observations, which I think is one of the more important observations. And again, this is just one out of many different observations that I had. I can make a whole series out of this one. Like, we could be here until 6 o'clock. Anyone have any lunch plans? But I just want to give you one observation, and then I want to give you a practice for this week. And I need to start by telling you a story about alarms in nursing homes. So recently I went to go visit someone in a nursing home. And you do the thing you do when you walk into a hospital or nursing home. You walk through the front door, the doors slide open, you walk through, you go to the front desk, there's someone standing, there's someone there greeting you, and they have a big giant book. And you have to sign that book, and then they look up where the person is that you're going to visit. They give you a sticker, visitor, to let everyone know that you don't belong there, so that you really stand out. And then they say, oh, make a left here, go down the hallway, on the left-hand side are the elevators, take the elevator up to the fourth floor, make a left as you get out of the elevator, take that hallway all the way to the end, and there the last door on the left. Great, got it. Walk past the desk, walk down the hallway, elevator on the left-hand side. I hit that little button that you hit when you want to summon the elevator. And around the edges of that circle, it lights up with a little red light to let you know you're waiting for the elevator to go up. And then these particular elevators, they had a digital readout above them. There were two of them that showed you exactly which floor the elevators were currently on. You know these, right? Yeah. So I look up, and it says 4 and 3. Oh, okay, I don't have to wait too long. I'm on the ground floor. I'm standing there. And standing there. 4 and 3. All right, it's gonna be a while. I look to my right, and it says stairs. Oh, I could take the stairs. But I see a keypad by the stairs, and I'm thinking, maybe I shouldn't, but this is just taking forever. I guess I should go take the stairs. So I walk over to the door, and it has that big metal bar in the middle that you push in order to get the door open. I push the bar, and as soon as I push that bar, this siren starts blaring throughout the entire building. And there's no one else by the door. There's another elderly woman walking with her walker across the floor and me. And I look at her, and I start to smile. She doesn't look at me. Like, she just keeps on going. And so I stand there, and I just start laughing. Like, oh, I can't believe. Oh, well. So I'm there waiting, looking around, seeing who's going to come. I think I was actually helping them out because giving them sort of a drill. It took, no joke, at least a minute for someone to come. And then two nurses came running down the hallway, like looking around like, who, which patient is trying to escape? It's just me. It's okay. Oh, yeah, why do I tell you this story? Because this is what happens when you don't rest. You lack the ability to be patient. And everything becomes about the now. And if the now doesn't provide that immediate satisfaction that you deserve, that you require, that you want, well, then you're off to the next thing. Because we're so used to this frenzied pace of living one place to the next, to the next. And when the elevators don't come down quick enough, you mistakenly walk over to that door, press the bar, and set an alarm off. I remember thinking to myself, I really couldn't just have waited another 30 seconds. I was in that much of a rush that I had to get up to the fourth floor. Like, no. Yet this is what happens when you don't rest. Everything becomes about the now. And you can't have the long view of where your life is going. Now, for some things, this is okay. For some things, yes, you need the now. But what about the times in your life when you were trying to change something about yourself? When you have a goal in mind of where you want to go, and it doesn't happen quick enough, do you begin to get stressed? Do you begin to beat yourself up thinking, oh, I should be further along than where I am right now at this point? You start to have this feeling bubbling up inside you like, oh, I should be further down the path. See, when we have this view of everything needs to happen now, it needs to be immediate, we no longer can have grace for ourselves or for others. We're no longer curious about where we find ourselves. Like, oh, okay, yeah, there's some more work for me to do here. Oh, you know what? Maybe I actually need a little more help. Maybe I need to track down a few other people and ask them some questions about this because they've been here before and apparently I'm not quite getting it. We lose the ability to actually enjoy the journey that we're on because we've lost our ability to be patient. And that's with ourselves, that's with others, it's with the goals that we set, it's with the changes that we long to make in our lives. Our journey is a long journey. Things take time. But yet when we're going and going, and when our value is about how quickly we can accomplish something or how much of something we can accomplish, we begin to view all of life from that perspective. And we no longer show ourselves grace and patience. And we live with this stressed out mentality where we're constantly beating ourselves up because we're not as far along enough as we think we should be. Or what about the projects that you're working on? Maybe there's a book. Maybe you're like, all right, I'm going to tackle War and Peace now. And I've gotten to page 3, and that's about as far as I've gotten. You're like, all right, this time I'm going to actually sit still and I'm going to tackle this book. Or maybe you want to write a book. Maybe you want to start a business. Maybe you want to begin a nonprofit that could really help a lot of people. Maybe it's an art project that you're working on. Maybe it's a new skill that you want to develop. Maybe you want to write an app for the phone. See, what happens is when we no longer have patience, when we're all about going and going, when you hit a snag somewhere early on in the process, which inevitably happens, it happens all the time, do you just simply give up? Oh, this hasn't produced what it promised or what I thought it would quickly enough. Do you just stop the project altogether and just move on to the next thing because hopefully something else will be a little easier? And then all the projects, all the gifts that you have buried deep within you, the gifts that could help all of us thrive and flourish in life, they stay buried deep within you because you don't have the patience to bring those to the surface. It's not going as quickly as I thought it would. See, when you live from a place of rest, you begin living from a whole new foundation. The world, society, it tells us that your value is based on how much you produce and how quickly you can produce it. But when you rest, when you're still, you realize that that's actually not always the best metric. And there's other things in life that will actually fill your soul and make you feel alive even more than how everything else over here is telling you to live. If we fast forward a few thousand years, we come upon someone by the name of Jesus. Maybe you've heard of him before. And Jesus, Matthew, in his gospel, when Jesus is teaching his disciples, he tells us that Jesus actually has some things to say about this type of life that he's inviting us into. Matthew chapter 18, verse 28, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Does this not sound an awful lot like living from a place of rest? Like living from a place of fullness rather than depletion? A place of patience? A place where you can actually show grace to yourselves? A place where you're not always running from one appointment, one block in the calendar to the next? Me and Steph were talking last night, and there's a grocer at the grocery store that we go to. He's always at the produce section, which is right in the front of the store when you walk in. And for 3 years at least, every single time we walk into the store, he's there, big, smiling face. And we stop and we talk to him for a couple of minutes. The past couple of times that we've gone, whether together or just one of us, we silently were hoping that he wasn't there. You ever do this? Because then we would have to actually stop and talk with him. We've been in such a rush going to the grocery store. And I get it. Sometimes it's just like that. I totally understand. But if that's the whole way in which you're living, day after day after day, it gets draining. It's tiring. It's exhausting. It leaves you empty. I would argue that the way of living that God was inviting the Israelites into, that Jesus was inviting his disciples into, that Jesus is still inviting us into today, it's a place of rest, a place of grace. And sometimes you need to intentionally step out of your life for a day, for a morning, for an afternoon, for a few hours, so that you can see that frenzied pace in which you were going. Sometimes you need to step out of the whole thing for a little while in order to realize that you've been striving and straining and groaning and lifting and beating yourself up and living from a place of depletion rather than just flowing down the river. And trusting that light yoke that Jesus promises. Now, the practice that I want to give you this morning, it's the same practice that I experimented with a little while ago. And it's one of, for this week, find some time that you can carve out where there aren't any distractions. Maybe it's a full day. Maybe you're like, I can do a morning. Great. I can do an afternoon. Awesome. I can do 2 hours. Okay, we'll start there. Carve out a time this week where you can ask yourself the question, what would most fill my soul right now? And then go and do it. No email. Put it on airplane mode. Don't get those buzzes and notifications. No phone calls, no texting. No distractions. Ask yourself the question, what would most fill my soul? And then go and do it. So we'll practice with this this week. And we'll see what it does. So we've had gratitude. Now we have rest. We have a few more weeks. And my prayer from the beginning and throughout this entire series is that we would find ourselves being more and more filled with peace and joy as the summer progresses, that we would actually begin to fully live into this life that Jesus offers, this life of lightness and of trusting the river. Let me pray here for us this morning. God, we come to you this morning, and God, we see this long tradition of you inviting your people into rest, into ceasing. God, into setting aside all the work and the to-dos and the chores and obligations and things that we have to do so that we can fill our soul. So God, I pray that this week, God, as we intentionally take time to rest, to play, God, to fill our souls, that we would feel a refilling, a replenishing. God, that we would feel a lightness. God, as we take the time to rest this week, I pray that your Spirit would meet us in those moments. And all the energies, everything that we've poured out from our working and our going, I pray that that would just be poured back into us. God, and that we would be a people who would live from a place of rest. And that that would transform how we live in this world. God, that we would be people of patience. God, people who have grace for ourselves, grace for the world. God, that we would be a people who would exhibit a whole new way of being human, a way that is more true and more real than the frantic pace that we so often see in the world around us. So we pray, we ask all this in the name of Jesus. Amen.